Then, one day in March 1963, notables of both France and the United States gathered at Flushing Meadows, New York, for the beginning of construction of Unisphere, theme symbol for a new World's Fair. Robert Moses, president of the World's Fair Corporation.
We looked high and low for a challenging symbol for the New York World's Fair of 1964 and 1965. It had to be of the space age. It had to reflect the interdependence of men on the planet Earth. And it had to emphasize their achievements and aspirations. It had to be the cynosure for all visitors, dominating Flushing Meadow and built to remain as a permanent feature of the park, reminding succeeding generations of a pageant of surpassing interest and significance. What stronger, more durable, and more appropriate metal in the record of American constructive accomplishments could be thought of than stainless steel? And what builder more imaginative and competent than the United States Steel Corporation?
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The 12-story high stainless steel representation of the Earth, known as the Unisphere, is located in the New York City borough of Queens. Fans of the television show King of Queens will recognize it from the opening credits. It was originally designed for the 1964-65 New York World's Fair, and it's become an iconic New York City landmark. In his book, Unisphere, Symbol of the 1964-1965 New York World's Fair, Robert Morris University professor Daniel Short chronicles the story of this iconic New York City landmark. Daniel Short, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Very happy to be here.
What got you interested in writing about the Unisphere and its origins?
I was in New York City, and I was visiting the New York Sci, which is their science center. And I stepped outside and saw the Unisphere for the first time in person. And this thing is very impressive. And it's kind of hidden by the tree line. And you see it, as you said, you see it in TV and movies. But if you're there in person, it is mind-blowing.
And why exactly is Peter Muller-Monk not often credited with creating the sphere?
That was the mystery that I was interested in. At the park, in front of Unisphere, there is a plaque, and it specifically states that Clark, Gilmore Clark and his firm, Clark and Rapuano, are the creators of Unisphere. And when you look into the story of things, sometimes, you know, the truth is not always out there. So I was interested in figuring out the complete story of Unisphere, and not just like a byline, or not just a website which talks about Clark and his involvement. Once I found out about Muller-Monk and their involvement and Pittsburgh-based U.S. Steel involvement in creating Unisphere, it became a story in itself.
And today, the Unisphere is a famous landmark, as you mentioned, in New York City. But when it was created, it developed a very negative reception. Why was that?
Well, everybody's a critic, as they say, and architects are no different to music critics or anything else. So at the time, it was a big competition. Who would get their idea out there for a World's Fair? So we're talking about, like, the Eiffel Tower, for example, is a theme center for a World's Fair. The other World's Fairs have had really interesting centerpieces, and this was big.
I think the Space Needle wasn't that a
Space Needle? Yep. And any World's Fair has been symbolized by a central theme center or symbol, and so to get the job of the 64-65 World's Fair Theme Center was a big deal.
And so, why was it this design even decided upon? Do you know how it became the thing that they thought would be the centerpiece?
Well, that's where I'll plug my book, because a lot of research I had to do to figure out exactly where this idea came from. And I got about 90% there. I found the original documents where they're discussing in memos about what the choice would be. I found a lot of original drawings for what was under consideration from the public, and also a large competition that was held. And ultimately, it came down to two men. It came down to Robert Moses and Jill Clark deciding that the space age was upon them and the fair would be very futuristic in its style, a type of architecture called Googie. And so Unisphere was really born out of these two men and their friendship. And from there, there's the story of its creation and changes to its design. The fact that Clark was interested in having it turning and the satellites would orbit. And at one point, they came up with an idea to put a giant Carillion bell inside the thing. So the story of Unisphere is, you know, it's more than just a single page that you would normally find in a book, which is where my book has come from.
And why do you think opinions about the Unisphere have changed since it first debuted? Because we were talking about the negative reaction it first received, but now it is, you know, when you watch the U.S. Open tennis matches, which are played in that era, in that area of Queens, that they will go out of their way to make sure they get a shot of the Unisphere. It's just become this iconic symbol. But what got it to that point after a pretty bad start?
Well, the Unisphere cost $2 million to build, and they spent $2 million on it in 95, I believe. The New York Parks spent $2 million to make it shine again. And so it does really show that people are in love with this thing. If you live in Queens, it's the symbol of your borough. There's collectors of Unisphere memorabilia. There are people still alive that went to the 64-65 World's Fair who reminisce about their time as a child there. The Unisphere was the centerpiece, so they remember it. One of my favorite movies, Black Rain, with Michael Douglas, it's right there at the start. Various shows that they make now in New York, they use that as a symbol, you know. So I think stainless steel, U.S. steel, Pittsburgh, this thing's going to be around pretty much forever. It's going to outlive everybody who built it. It's going to outlive everybody who sees it today. So it is like a major New York landmark.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and I'm talking with Robert Morris University Professor Daniel Short, who chronicles the story of the New York City landmark, the Unisphere, which was the centerpiece of the 1964-65 New York World's Fair. His book is called Unisphere, Symbol of the 1964-1965 New York World's Fair. And since so little was written about the Unisphere before your book, did you find it difficult to research the origins of the sphere and the historical context around it?
That's a great question. So today, I teach science, and we go online, and everything's there. We log into our databases, and we can read all the latest publications. But, you know, the fact that it's there is because it was saved. And unfortunately, a lot of information about Unisphere was not saved. It was actually lost in one of the Pittsburgh floods in the 1980s. So
why would it have been lost in a Pittsburgh flood? Because it's a U.S. steel creation?
The information I was mostly interested in was the Muller Monk information that we're going to...
Which is archived here.
We would hope was archived in Pittsburgh. But the story of Muller Monk is even as fascinating as Unisphere. And the Carnegie Museum's book, Silver to Steel, the story of Muller Monk Associates, will hopefully touch on the fact that a lot of work has been put into creating this exhibit at CMOA, Carnegie Museum of Art. And there's three surviving members of Muller Monk who have provided information about the projects that Muller Monk Associates worked on. As far as Unisphere is concerned, we have this oral history, but we also have an amazing archive in New York Public Library, amazing archive in Columbia Avery Architectural Library, where the way it used to be done, instead of emails, would be memos between very powerful people on committees deciding what would happen next. And these memos survive. And I was lucky enough to have some help from Dr. Campanella at Cornell University, sharing information for his new book on Michael Rapuano of Clark and Rapuano architecture. And so a community of scholars and visits to libraries, a lot of reading and travel to try and put this story together was necessary, because a lot of these older archives are not digitized. You have to go in, you have to painstakingly go through. I think there's 53 boxes for the World's Fair at NYPL. Painstakingly go through these memos to put this story together.
Wow. So as noted in your book, the initial conceptual designer for the Unisphere was Gilmore Clark, who often is credited with the final product. How different is the actual Unisphere from Clark's original design?
Well, Clark's idea of having an armillary sphere with revolving satellites, it's still there. That is still the design. What Müller Monk associates were able to do was tweak the design for steel. So Clark's idea is aluminum. It's mesh continents. It's maybe some sculptural fountains around it. You'll see in the book there are some pictures of the original blueprints for the fountains that were Zodiac designs. His sphere is very similar to a sphere that was at the previous World's Fair at Flushing Meadows. It was by a sculptor called Paul Manship. And his armillary sphere, I forget the name of it, but his armillary sphere was about 5 foot in diameter. And it's their Unisphere design was very similar. So if you look at the original blueprints that are in Cornell's archive of Clark and Rapuano architects, you will see the similarities. And then the next stage is it was handed off to Müller Monk to design it something that would actually work, because Clark and Rapuano were landscape architects, something that would actually hold up this 900,000-pound, 12-story-high sculpture had to stand, or has to stand forever, because that was going to be the only piece of the World's Fair that was left over. Of course, there's another piece left over, the New York State Pavilion, but that's another story. The Unisphere was supposed to last forever. So it had to be designed in a material that would last, stainless steel. It had to withstand the winds, which are extremely destructive. So it had to be tested for forces, thousands of pounds of force. And that's one of the reasons I like it so much, is because of all the science and engineering that went into the project.
So they knew ahead of time this was going to be the piece that would stay up.
Yeah,
after all
they wanted it. They wanted it. Well, Robert Moses, he had already worked on the previous fair, the 3940, and this last, he was 70 years old at the time, 1960. This last kind of breath of his career, he wanted Flushing Meadows to be finished. It wasn't finished for the 3940 fair. Moses wanted this fair to be like his capstone, his like finished statement about New York City.
It's a fascinating story, and it is all chronicled in the book Unisphere, Symbol of the 1964-1965 New York World's Fair by Robert Morris University Professor Daniel Short, who has been my guest. Professor Short, it's been a pleasure visiting with you. Thank you so much for sharing this fascinating story with us.
Thank you.
And coming up, we'll go aboard the newly reopened Raquind, the submarine that sits just outside the Carnegie Science Center in Pittsburgh. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.